Good afternoon. Welcome to Workforce and Business Development Finance and Business Finance and Policy Committee. I call this meeting to order. It's now 1:45. And with that, I wanted to let you know that because of the delays, we will be starting this meeting right now at around 1:45, and it will go up to 3:15 p.m. This remote hearing is being conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed on the House webcast. With that, I wanted to ask Legislative Assistant, Committee Legislative Assistant, Mr. Chavez, to take the role.
Chair Noir.
Present.
Chair Noir, present. Vice Chair Jaejong.
Present.
Vice Chair Jaejong, present. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton, present. Baker. Baker, Dabney, Representative Dabney.
Dabney present.
Representative Dabney present. Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Greenman. Present. Greenman present. Haley. Haley. Juergens. Juergens.
Present.
Juergens present. Cagle.
Present.
Cagle present. Katiza Watun?
Present.
Katiza Watun present. Olson?
Present.
Olson present. Tujong?
Present.
Tujong present. Baker? Baker? Haley? Haley.
I just let Representative Baker in from the waiting rooms if you want to give him 10 seconds and try again.
For sure. Thank you. Representative Baker?
Baker here. Thank you.
Representative Baker present. And then Haley? Haley. Mr. Chair, we have quorum.
There's a quorum present. Thank you. Members, I'll now entertain a motion to approve the minutes for March 8th. Yes, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, I just moved the minutes for March 8th.
Representative Greenman moved the minutes for March 8th. Any discussions? Any discussions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Seeing none, the motion prevails. The minutes for March 8th, 2021 is now approved. With that, members, we do have three bills. We have four bills, and all those four bills will have a full hearing for the 90 minutes. We started late, but we'll continue with our regular 90-minute session. The first bill before us is House File 1750. Representative Christensen, welcome to the committee. I will now move House File 1750 to be re-referred to Climate and Energy Committee. Please welcome to the committee and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Across Minnesota and the nation, the energy landscape is rapidly changing. As technology advances and market forces drive the addition of more carbon-free and renewable resources to our system, all of our state's largest baseload power plants, which have powered the region for decades, will be considered for retirement within the next 20 years. This transition will have widespread benefits, but unless we approach the transition collaboratively and proactively, it will also have deep impacts on the cities that host retiring power plants and the workers who have made their lives and careers working in those plants. House File 1750 is a bill that aims to enhance Minnesota's ability to support communities and workers that will be negatively impacted. The bill has two major components. First, the creation of an energy transition legacy plan, which would incorporate the feedback of local governments, state agencies, and the creation and funding of an energy transition legacy office housed within DEED to provide ongoing support to transitioning communities and workers. For the communities that host them, the plants are economic engines that provide significant tax base and high quality jobs. Cities and counties are working hard as we speak to prepare for and mitigate the impacts of that retirement, but they can't do it alone. Likewise, workers employed at the plants, including the many contractors whose livelihoods are tied to the plants, also face difficult crossroads. The high quality, well-paying jobs available at these facilities are the kind that aren't easily replaced. House File 1750 is based on a similar concept that is currently operating in the state of Colorado, but it also incorporates the feedback of communities that are already working hard to navigate this transition. My testifiers today will speak to the needs of this bill and will help address why it's an appropriate next step that we can take to support the communities that have helped power the region for decades. Mr. Chair, would you like me to introduce my testifiers?
Yes, please go ahead and introduce the first testifier and we'll proceed from there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to introduce Mary McCumber, who is the mayor of Oak Park Heights, which is in my district. And my district hosts the King plant in her city. And she's going to speak to this bill and to the impact that the city will see as a result of closing the King plant in the near future.
Mayor McCumber, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Noor and members of the committee. My name is Mary McCumber, and I serve as the mayor of the city of Oak Park Heights. I'm here to testify in support of House File 1750. As Representative Christensen noted, Oak Park Heights has hosted the XL Energy's Allen S. King coal plant for more than 50 years. Although the plant's license runs through 2037, XL's current integrated resource plan proposes early retirement as early as 2028. Retirement of the plant will have deep impacts on our community. Property taxes attributable to the plant make up roughly 40% of our city's tax base. But the plant also has a major footprint in our community along the St. Croix River that has one of the lasting legacies following this retirement. Locally, we are working actively to plan for this transition. We have currently convened a local planning and advisory group to gather community input regarding the future use of the site, but carrying out that vision will take a great deal of coordination and support with an even broader range of stakeholders, including the state. The more we work on this transition, the more complex it is. Different aspects of the transition touch multiple state agencies, but the mechanisms for cooperation and coordination across state agencies does not currently exist. Moreover, existing state programs to support community development and displaced workers may not account for many of the unique and complex considerations that arise with transitions of this type or of this scale. This type of support the communities and workers need now is the type that is best executed when it is approached as a team. This bill takes a massive step forward with the creation of a state transition plan and creating an office that will provide the ongoing work and coordination needed to execute such a plan. The forward-looking collaborative approach in this bill recognizes that different communities will have different needs at different times and puts in place a structure to identify existing resources available to those communities as well as where current resources fall short. We know that these transitions are coming. We have the opportunity to get this right, but if we have the right partnerships in place to see it through, without a structure like the one laid out in this bill, communities will likely still be coming to the state for help, but without a defined role of how the state can help. I want to thank the committee for hearing this bill and to Representative Christensen and the co-authors on the bill for continuing to be champions for communities such as mine. And I will stand for any questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. The next person is Mr. Peters.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Max Peters. I serve as Director of Operations and Finance for the City of Cohasset. I also serve as the Vice President of the Coalition of Utility Cities, a group of eight cities that host the state's largest power plants and work collectively on unique issues that face our communities. Cohasset is a city of around 2,700 in Itasca County and is home to Minnesota Power's Clay Boswell coal-fired power plant. Boswell's coal-fired power plant with four coal generation units under one roof. Two of the four coal units retired in recent years, but as the committee is also likely aware, Minnesota Power recently filed an integrated resource plan that proposes retirement of the final two units, the largest, in 2030 and 2035, respectively. The Boswell plant has been an economic engine for our community that provides reliable power to the entire region, supporting vital industries like paper and mining. As reflected in the community impact study conducted by the Center for Energy and Environment, the plant contributes about 69% of our city's tax base, 13% of the county, and 19% of the local school district tax base. If the Boswell plant were to close, those tax contributions would vanish essentially overnight. The plant also employs around 185 full-time workers, and many other jobs are supported by the activity at the plant. These are high-quality jobs that pay well above the median household average in Itasca County and will be incredibly difficult to replace. Locally, we're doing everything that we can to prevent some of these impacts by diversifying our tax base and partnering with anyone who can help. So far, we've received great support from the state, Minnesota Power, and others. But the more we work on this transition, the more we realize that additional support and coordination is needed for both communities and workers to make the transition successfully. House File 1750 is designed to help our state create a roadmap for how to address these transitions while also putting in place the infrastructure necessary to carry out the transition. This is important work that the state can be doing now to ensure that any local government or worker that is facing a transition or will in the future will have the guidance and support they need. House File 1750 borrows concepts from other states that are actively working to address these same issues, but aims to improve upon them and make the most efficient use of Minnesota's resources by providing a central clearinghouse to coordinate work that we know will impact multiple communities and hundreds or thousands of individual workers. I'm happy to stand for questions. The Coalition of Utility Cities Legislative Consultant Shane Zahart is also on the line and available to respond to questions about the bill. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so much for your testimony. The next person is Ms. Fitzk. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, good afternoon. Chair Knorr, Representative Christensen, and members of the committee. I'm Jamie Fitzke, Legislative Policy Manager for the Center for Energy and Environment, more commonly known as CEE. CEE is a nonprofit based in the Twin Cities with over 40 years of energy experience in research and development, program implementation, community outreach, and policy. CEE fully supports House File 1750, a Minnesota Energy Transition Legacy Office, Advisory Committee, and Plan would establish and create a single point of contact for host communities, which creates efficiencies and opportunities to leverage coordinated assistance. Additionally, there are existing statutes and newly introduced legislation that include and affect stakeholders in host communities. House File 1750 creates the ability to connect these multifaceted aspects and stakeholders to become the central point of information and action. Much of our support for this legislation is derived from insights provided through the Minnesota Host Communities Report, which is publicly posted and was provided to the committee. Following my testimony is my colleague who led the study, Ms. Audrey Partridge, and she will share some of her findings from the report and community conversations. Thank you, Representative Christensen, co-authors for bringing this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Now to Audrey Partridge. And Ms. Partridge, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Noor, Representative Christensen, and members of the committee, thank you for having me here. I'm Audrey Partridge, Manager of Regulatory Policy for CEE. As my colleague said, I led the 2019 Minnesota Host Community Study with the support of the Coalition of Utility Cities. Through that study, we worked with six different Minnesota power plant communities facing retirements in the coming years and several unions representing the men and women who work in and on those plants. We interviewed over 50 community leaders and workers, surveyed another 50 plus workers and community members, collected tax data, reviewed national case studies of plant transitions, and reviewed key Minnesota state policies. Through that work, I learned about the complex and multidimensional challenges communities and workers face as they work to transition through plant retirements. They will need to access assistance and funding from a variety of sources across a number of different governmental agencies and bodies, and at every level of government from local to federal. Currently, communities and workers are essentially on their own to discover and piece these resources together. A central office at the state level focused on assisting communities and workers, bringing resources together, and then coordinating between all the various important entities would provide communities and workers the support they need to tackle the challenges ahead and thrive beyond plant closures. This bill is an important step in supporting our communities and workers. And thank you to the committee for considering the bill and to everyone who worked to develop it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your testimony. The next person is Mr. Mulholland. Please welcome to the committee and introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Sure. Hello, Chair Noor and members of the committee. My name is Evan Mulholland. I'm a staff attorney at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And I am testifying on behalf of MCEA today. We're a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment. So it's really important for me to be here today. I worked with a lot of these folks on the stakeholder group for Minnesota Power, and I'm here in support of this bill, House File 1750. So as many of you know, MCEA is working hard for the rapid retirement of all the coal plants in Minnesota, because burning coal harms our climate and is harming the natural world on which we all depend. Yet, I also want to emphasize how important it is to develop and fund with state tax money a plan for the workers and the communities, especially the workers that will be out of a job when the plant shut down. This bill is a step in the right direction. The people who work at all our electric generating plants have dedicated a huge portion of their lives, their working hours, to keeping these complex machines running around the clock and providing the power that we all use, that we're using right now. We have an obligation as a state and citizens of Minnesota to support them as we make the necessary transition to a low and no carbon future. MCEA encourages the committee to swiftly move this bill forward. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you so much. The last person to testify, but not the least, is Mr. Underdahl. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Thor Underdahl with Minnesota Power. I first want to thank the committee for the opportunity to comment on House File 1750 and also to Representative Christensen for carrying this important bill. Minnesota Power has proudly served northeastern Minnesota for over a century. The communities where our generation facilities are located are more than just host communities. They are part of the fabric of our company. Our employees live, work, and play in these communities, and we are forever grateful and interwoven into their ultimate success. We have been on an important transition over the last decade as we have moved from a fleet of resources predominantly coal-based to a more diversified and less carbon-intense portfolio. This is good for the environment and has been done with reliability and affordability in mind, but has meant significant change for our communities and workers. As has previously been mentioned by Mr. Peters, we recently filed our most recent integrated resource plan, in which the Public Utilities Commission required us to review early retirement scenarios for our final two coal units, Boswell 3 and 4 in Cohasset. After careful analysis and with robust stakeholder input, we outlined a plan to thoughtfully and pragmatically move toward a retirement of Unit 3 in 2030 and to cease coal operation at MP's Unit 4 in 2035, with an eye towards utilizing this infrastructure with low carbon solutions. While this plan gives us some time to work on this transition, it will certainly take a thoughtful and coordinated effort to support this end. House File 1750 provides a meaningful path towards facilitating the continued discussion around that important topic. We look forward to seeing this effort move forward and including the necessary support to DEED to allow them to effectively carry these goals out. We again thank the chief author, community leaders here in support, and committee members for their time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And members, it's now time for discussion or comments. I see Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, Representative Christensen, I think I missed the Energy Committee, by the way. I miss our conversations and our robust discussions about so many things. And this is, I know it's been a hot topic for many years since I've been on that committee as well. My question, I guess, is, you know, to the author, Mr. Chair, why is natural gas included? And, you know, maybe, anyway, just if you could answer that, because that's a big part of this component, if you could answer that.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to defer to Shane Zart, who is the consultant from the Coalition of Utility Cities.
Mr. Zart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker. Well, for the record, my name is Shane Zart with the firm Flaherty and Hood, and I represent the Coalition of Utility Cities. And to respond to your question, I think that natural gas is included in the eligibility as it relates to cities that host natural gas facilities, in part because the bill is focused squarely on who are the communities that are going to face the types of impacts that we can see coming down the line, and where we can take a proactive approach to supporting those communities so that the lost tax base doesn't, you know, shift onto their other communities and businesses. Where are their workers who we can take a proactive approach to supporting? And some of those communities currently in the state are hosting natural gas facilities. One in particular that is a member of the Coalition of Utility Cities is the city of Hoyt Lakes, a city on Minnesota Power system where the Alaskan plant there was formerly coal, converted to natural gas, but for that community still makes up about roughly 40% of the city's tax base. They'll see some of these similar impacts when that facility retires at some point. So that's the idea behind taking an inclusive approach there in terms of the fuel sources.
Representative Beck.
Mr. Chair, and again, I don't know if I continue to ask the question to the testifier, to the author of the bill who, you know, is running this thing forward. As a former member of the Willmar Municipal Utilities, I sat on the Energy Commission. I was president for a number of years. I learned a lot about energy and the complexities of this. And I think what's important for this committee to really understand is when we have major shifts in policy, and I've always said, and any of the stakeholders and the lobbyists that are on this board to this committee meeting to kind of hear this, I've always used the word balance. We have got to use the right word balance in this conversation so that we don't tilt the scale of the two most important words to me also are affordability and reliability. And this is my question, Mr. Chair, and I think I'll pivot it to maybe Shane if he was going to answer this. If something like this passes and we create this legacy office and this working really kind of a major thinking change here, is this going to likely, again, being a commissioner that doesn't understand energy as much as you need to when you're deep in the energy world and engineering and everything else, is this not going to really cause a outflow of consultants, kind of a mega pipeline? Because, you know, small communities that have natural gas or even maybe some short-ended coal, we shut down our coal in Wilmer recently. We couldn't do it. It wasn't worth a while. But my question is, I think we're going to have to start hiring a bunch of folks to make sure that we're ready, stood up for this. I know that maybe the Legacy Transition Office does some of that, but what I have seen in energy is that we create this sort of a panicky feeling. And as a commissioner in these areas, we want to make sure we're ready for this type of thing coming, which also anything you spend affects the ratepayers at the end. So, Mr. Zart, is that a fair statement that those things like that would happen? And I have one more follow-up with that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Zert, but I just wanted to note that we consider ourselves as generalists, so I'll let Mr. Zert answer the underlying question that you asked.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker. You can let me know if this gets at the heart of your question, but I think that as one of the testifiers mentioned, this bill was assembled kind of trying to draw from the experience of different states, many of which are approaching the same transition at once. And this particular approach and the collaborative kind of cross-agency approach that it takes emerged to us as attractive because I think that one of the things that we were continually confronting working with these local governments as a gap in our state's existing infrastructure to address some of the challenges of the transition is that, aspects of the transition are so complex that they might touch multiple different agencies. The mechanisms, even state programs, that type of thing might already exist that could be helpful, but they might touch different agencies. And if we can facilitate a process where those agencies can talk to each other, get in the same room, look at some of the specific impacts and complexities of these transitions, then we can make a more effective use of the state's time and resources and do it in a planful way. So that's part of the design here. Is to provide a forum for that cross-agency collaboration. That might answer part of your question. You can let me know if I didn't get to the heart of it, though.
Mr. Chair, no, I think that missed most of my question, but we can maybe take that up offline, I think. It's complicated, and I know there's other bills to carry, and I want to be respectful of the committee's time. Final question, maybe this is for the author again, too, is, you know, what gas plants are actually being retired, Representative Christensen, and where are they located? Is there a lot of them in the state? How many are we talking about here?
Should we refer that to Mr. Zert, who is well informed about it? Representative Christensen.
Thank you. Thanks for the question, Representative Baker, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm going to defer to Shane about the natural gas plants.
Mr. Zert.
Well, thank you again, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker. This, again, it might not answer your question directly, and we can follow up as well. But I think the intent of this bill is to take a forward-looking and proactive approach to any community and worker that might be facing one of these transitions as a result of a plant retirement. We know that in most cases, at least in the near future, that it's going to be coal facilities. Those are the ones that from the Minnesota Power testifier, from Xcel Energy's Integrated Resource Plan, each of those utilities in their own right is looking at retiring their existing coal assets. The nuclear communities know that they may have a little bit of longer runway, but they're actively preparing for some of these transitions to come down the line as well. And in many ways, you know, making every financial decision that they make as a city with an eye toward, what might happen eventually down the line there. So this level of coordination, we think is important for any community that might face it at some point. Coal, nuclear, and natural gas might fall in that same category where, coal might be the most urgent need today, but we want to look at any community and take a responsible approach and a planful kind of holistic look at how do we prevent some of these transitions from causing unwanted shifts of property tax burden or whatever it is onto other residents and businesses in these communities. We've got the time in most cases to do some planning. Let's use it effectively and see if we can avoid some of that. So that I didn't give you an exact number, but I hope that at least clarifies the approach or why a little bit of how this is structured again.
Representative Beck, I know there are other members who have good questions, and we have the three more bills.
Yeah, just a final comment. I need to know at some point, not now, if it's five, if it's 50. And I think what's concerning me about this bill, Representative Christensen, is that natural gas is even a part of this right now. I don't disagree with Shane talking about coal plants are highlighted. I know the future of nuclear plants is somewhat limited because you can't really build one anymore. It's too expensive. But natural gas does not belong in this bill. I urge the author to consider removing that component of it to cut that out. It's gonna have a bad reaction to this. So with that, Mr. Chair, thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. The next person is Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was a little late to the discussion coming from the chambers today. So if this has been addressed, I apologize. So Representative Christensen, thank you for bringing this forward. I represent the community of Red Wing, which hosts the XL Prairie Island Nuclear Power Plant. Our IRP isn't due until, I think, 2022. We're not, you know, facing a closure, but we will have the recommendations or the proposals from that IRP coming in a couple years. My questions, Representative Christensen, are more on the formation of this, new government agency and how the dollar amount of $450 million was determined. My understanding is you patterned a lot of this after Colorado's process, and I believe their allocation was around 200. So if you can speak to that, thank you.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Haley, for the question. The dollar amount is $450,000 per year. Yeah, not $450,000.
Yeah, thank you.
But as I understand it, and I will have Mr. Zart click in here if he needs to, but as I understand it, it was in cooperation with DEED, talking with them about what it would take to set up this kind of office and to be able to organize, organize all the members of the committee, et cetera. But I'll defer to Mr. Zart again, see if he has any more to add.
If you can be a little bit brief so that we can proceed, go ahead.
Sure. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. And Representative Haley, yes, the $450,000 was an estimate that as far as what would the staffing needs to be in the first biennium to set up this office, allow it to do the work of convening the advisory committee that's called for in the bill and issue the statewide transition plan. We came up with that number by in consultation with DEED, with the department, and landed on that as a fair estimate of what the staffing needs might need to be to carry out the purpose and duties of the office for the first couple of years. So that's where that's coming from.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you need to move on. I will be supporting your bill today, Representative Christensen, but I do have concerns about the dollar amount in the bill and the size of this agency, and really need to learn more about, again, how that money would be allocated. This is a very complex issue. I know this bill will be going through multiple committees and we'll be spending lots of time on it this session, and frankly, probably going into next. So I will be participating in that discussion as this moves forward, but I wanted to just get those concerns on the table. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Christensen.
Thank you. The next person is Lee Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to thank Mr. Zard for updating me on the issue pertaining to the plants that are going to be closing and the need to address misplaced workers and stuff like that. I get that now and I understand that. The part that I'm struggling with is, why do we need to establish a whole nother entity? And I'm not quite there yet. So if someone could once again just touch on that for me, on why this complete entity needs to be established versus utilizing what we currently have with Indeed, that would be helpful, because right now I'm leaning towards a no vote on this bill. So if someone could please address that one more time. Thank you.
Mr. Zer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Lead Hamilton. I think that's a great question, and one that we weighed as we decided as a group of cities, is this the right approach, and is this kind of the work that the support that as communities would be very effective as a next step in the transition. And again, as we kind of looked around the country, what are other states doing? This approach from Colorado emerged to us because what we saw there was kind of a holistic, planful approach. What we don't want, and what maybe I think we risk if we don't take a more coordinated approach or create some infrastructure for these discussions, especially across agencies, is communities coming to the legislature one by one, or trying to go it alone, or come up with ideas or financing kind of in a vacuum. And this approach, I think, is one that was so attractive to us because we think by taking a more planful approach, to putting some organization around the transition, that we can do that in a much more effective way. And you referenced the existing resources at DEED. We've had some conversations with the agency too. You know, they have a lot of great staff that administer a number of grant programs, economic development programs, even workforce transition programs. In conversations with them, you know, they don't have necessarily the specific expertise or the type of community development staff that can work on the ground consistently with a set of communities that we know are going to have, excuse me, that we know are going to have unique needs coming up in the future. So this is what that helps to supplement. And then with some input across agencies where, you know, DEED might have the community finance expertise, but Commerce has more of the energy expertise that would be helpful to them in administering these programs. Or DOR might know about the property tax implications, but Commerce and DEED would have a role in helping to overcome those. So that's where we thought this approach would actually supplement, not be duplicative of anything that already exists in the state, actually supplement the resources we have and make better uses of those where we can identify challenges with existing programs that can be filled in by the recommendations that this group can come up with, can move forward in a more efficient way.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. The last person is Representative Franke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Christensen. I just have a question about Subdivision 20. I guess this is the first time I've ever read anything like this, and I wonder if somebody could explain it. And then Subdivision 7, gifts, grants, and donations. The advisory committee may accept gifts and grants which are accepted on behalf of the state and constitute donation of the state. Funds received under this subdivision are appropriated to the Commissioner of Economic Employment and Economic Development to support the purpose of this committee. Where would those gifts, grants, and donations be coming from? And I guess that just that whole subdivision in itself kind of worries me a little bit. So if I could get an explanation on that, that would be great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Christensen.
And Mr. Zark, if you could respond to the question, that'd be great. Thank you.
Mr. Zark.
Yes, well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Franke. That provision, I think there are, it's a unique one, but there are parallels elsewhere in state law. That was one that was brought to us as a suggestion as we circulated this bill for some feedback and kind of in recognition that, you know, in addition to investing state funds in doing some of this important work, there might be foundations or others out there who are interested in providing grants or whether it be funding opportunities from nonprofit or foundation sources. If an agency is going to be able to take those, I think the authorizing language like this is needed, and it would be, you know, within the scope of overseen by the advisory committee that would be set up to oversee the work here. So there would be a direct oversight role, but we might want to authorize the body to receive those in order to supplement the work that it's already going to be doing with the state funds.
Representative Franke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for that brief explanation. I guess to me, language like that just worries me that I don't see much of an oversight in there, at least from a legislative perspective. I know working in local city government, whenever we got a gift, grant, or a donation to the city, we had to approve that by the elected officials to accept that monthly. So I guess I would like to see some work on that going forward. Just my observation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I see Representative Juggins. Did you have a quick question?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't see this in here. Would this task force or group, would they also help transition potentially from one type of power generation to another? So for example, from coal to natural gas, or is it only strictly for closure of those power plants and how the communities would react based upon that closure?
Mr. Zett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Juergens. I think the intent of the language is that especially in the first year, as this group undertakes the work of establishing a state transition plan, it would be to take a look at and estimate and identify where will those impacts take place. If through that process we do identify that those types of transitions should be covered here too, I think the latitude to undertake that work is contemplated in the bill. So I think that, or I hope that answers your question. Of course, the primary concern is where you have the end of a plant's life where that job might not be able to be replaced. But we know that when we undergo fuel source transitions too, sometimes there are reductions in the workforce that take place at that point too. And I think we would intend for those to be covered in there as well.
So just as a follow-up, Mr. Chair, so it's not specifically called out or specified in this bill, but it's not prohibited either. So that could potentially be part of the purview of this group.
Mr. Zart.
Mr. Chair and Representative Juergens, I think that that's correct, and certainly the intent to cover transitions like that. And that's something I think we'd be happy to receive input on as this bill moves forward. Is are we defining the set of individuals, workers, and communities so that we're being inclusive of all of the types of impacts that you would want to address if you're going to do something like this? And we'd love to hear feedback on that, and we'll continue to refine the bill if needed to make sure that some of those are covered.
Thank you, Mr. Zark. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. Do you have any closing remarks before we vote on the bill?
Yeah, I'll be brief. And thank you, everyone, for the great questions. This is a great bill. It's bicameral. It has Republican unanimous support in the Senate through a couple committees. And I know statewide we have a lot of support with cities that are going to be affected by these closures and the changes, the transitions that will be coming in our future. So thanks so much, Mr. Chair, for hearing us, and I hope you can support House File 1750.
Thank you so much, Representative Christensen, for bringing this bill forward. And to the testifiers, I renew my motion House File 1750 be re-referred to Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee. The committee legislative assistant will now take the roll.
Chair Noor.
Aye.
Chair Noor, aye. Vice Chair Jaejong.
Aye.
Vice Chair Jaejong, aye. Lead Hamilton.
No.
Lead Hamilton, no. Baker.
Baker, no.
Baker, no. Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Frankie.
Aye.
Frankie, aye. Greenman. Aye. Greenman, aye. Haley.
Haley, aye.
Haley, aye. Juergens.
Juergens, aye.
Juergens, aye. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Katiza Watoon.
Aye.
Katiza Watoon, aye. Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Toujong.
Aye.
Toujong, aye. Mr. Chair, the motion prevails with 11 ayes and 12 noes.
With 11 ayes and how many noes?
Two.
Two. The motion prevails, and the bill is approved, and Representative Christensen, you are on your way. We have House File 1206 next. Representative Agbaje, welcome to the committee, and I move House File 1206 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Workforce and Business Development Omnibus Bill. Please introduce the bill to us. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. It's good to be back presenting in front of the committee again. Today, I am presenting House File 1206. It is a bill that would continue and expand the incredible work that's being done by Summit Academy OIC. So Summit Academy is a leader in workforce development in the Twin Cities, training nearly 1,000 adults each year with marketable skills in healthcare, building trades, IT, alongside a 10-week GED program. And so Summit Academy offers a 20-week training program that prepares students for the workforce. And there, students attend without paying any out-of-pocket tuition or student loans. The purpose of Summit Academy is to assist individuals in developing their ability to earn and to become contributing citizens in their community. Summit Academy is also fundamentally believes that the best social service program in the world is a job. The remarkable track record of success speaks to that belief. A study conducted in 2017 by Rainbow Research found that Summit Place students maintained a job retention rate of 82% over a three-year period. And the Constellation Fund recently found that every dollar invested in Summit's employment and education services actually generates an estimated $7.52 in immediate and long-term graduate earnings and improved health outcomes. Over the past few years, Summit Academy has entered into partnerships with Atomic Data, Target Corporation, Best Buy, and U.S. Bank that are providing a boost as Summit expands their training programs, especially in the IT space. In a world full of talk, it is inspiring to see Summit Academy is about taking action. The legislature has supported Summit Academy's work on a bipartisan basis and is doing so again this year, and I strongly encourage you to continue that by supporting this legislation. With that, I would like to introduce Louis King, President and CEO of Summit Academy, and in addition, you'll also hear from Gerald Garfinder, a graduate of Summit Academy, and who's now currently employed at Atomic Data. So I'll turn it over to them.
Thank you so much, Representative Agbaje. So I would like to welcome Mr. King. Please introduce yourself for the record and please proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Noir, and thank you for having me before the committee today, and thanks to Representative Abaje for sponsoring our bill and all the co-sponsors and members of the committee, and especially to Gerald for taking time off from work. I'm so proud of young men like him who came in and trusted us and helped us change their lives. And listening to the previous presentation, we're in the business of helping people make transitions and get into the middle class and stay there. I have a presentation for you today which highlights our work over the last few years. I led a merger in 1995 to form Summit, and we've become the largest construction training program in the Twin Cities area, as noted by the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Our specialty was electrical and carpentry, medical administrative assistant, and we got into information technology via service desk technicians and NOC, network operations centers, about 3 years ago. Recently, in a partnership with Target, we acquired 17,000 square feet at Plymouth and Penn in North Minneapolis in what was the Regional Acceleration Center, and have since expanded our technical offerings to solar energy, medical administrative assistant, cybersecurity, application development, and we're also planning financial services. Our partners have expanded to include Palo Alto Networks. We have an academy on board, Ameriprise, U.S. Bank, Allianz, and others. The employers are engaged in helping to design the programs, deliver them, and give two-week internships to our people, and actually pay us for the training. So we've managed to realign our offerings so that we meet the demands of today. And even in the construction arena, we're looking at things like building information modeling, and we've moved away from some of the bedpan type of business lines for our students because they did not afford upward mobility or a living wage. We utilize a career matriculation model, or CM3, as a path to the middle class. As stated previously, no one pays a dime or has any debt coming into Summit. Our students have a 21,000 household income. In 20 weeks, we can get them to $35,000. And we do that by engaging the businesses and community colleges in designing the program, a two-week paid on-the-job immersion internship. And we look for jobs that can where they can get $50,000 within 2 years. If somebody else in that house is earning $15 an hour, that household is now at $65,000 and can go to $80,000. They are in the middle class, in the new economy, at a time such as today when a year ago we couldn't foresee this type of hearing and the demands that it places on technology. So we're very excited about our partnerships with our businesses, with the ability to transfer our credits to community colleges, and we're looking for opportunities to partner in Greater Minnesota where we can help people who are trying to make the transitions, as was discussed previously. Our track record shows that we have the capacity to put people to work in high demand, high paying jobs. If you look at fiscal year 19, and you work from the bottom up, bottom line up front, 53% of the people who start Summit get jobs. That is a 53% enrollment to placement ratio. The median performance in the industry is 28%. And if you have 40% you're at the, in the 75th percentile for organizations that bring in, that enroll 500 plus students. For the 457 people who completed Summit, 424 got jobs. That's a 93% placement rate. The yellow line is completers. The blue line above, 799, starters. The gap in between is student attrition. And we have student attrition because they're poor people. $200 to $300 can throw them totally off track. Car repairs, rent, those types of things. One of the things that COVID did bring was relief dollars from the feds, and we were able to set up student success funds and put money into the pockets of students, and our retention rate is going up. Finally, the top line is our GED program, and there, in the last 3 years, we've handed out 300 GEDs. In fiscal year 20, we saw jobs drop naturally, but we were still in the 75th percentile, and our retention went up because the students were at home. It is our goal to double our enrollment, and this chart will be updated, to 2,000 students by the year 2023 and 3,000 by 2025. The board just gave us that objective. Our IT program in particular, in an industry that has 4% African-Americans in it in the Twin Cities, 47% of our graduates are Black. Also, they're young people. They have a long window for working, and they'll be able to contribute for a long time. These were some of our graduates who got hired on at Atomic Data. And again, 49% placement. And this is critical because you hear all of the talk about the disparities and inequities in the Twin Cities. There's, I read an article that showed that, you know, Twin Cities is doing really well, except if you're Black. Here is a shot where not only construction, but now IT. And what's great about this, when these people go into their careers, they create what I call the ant trail. Other people follow them. And so you build a history of folks going into these lines. And again, young people. And finally, the business community has stepped up as partners in terms of curriculum development, internships, lecturing, the mentorship they come in and do, mock interviews, and we have an industry advisory council. We worked in conjunction with professionals in the industry to build our cybersecurity program. And of course, they invest in the program. And we want to thank the state for your support. And we encourage you to stay on board as our partners, because we're aiming this training also at women who were impacted very heavily by COVID. And also, this is a fundamental way of addressing the disparities of the region without giving away. These three people will go work, become taxpayers, and inspire others. Thank you so much for affording me the opportunity to testify today.
The next person I have on the list is Gerald Griffin. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon. My name is Gerald Graffender, and I'm a recent graduate of the IT program of Summit Academy. I grew up in Whittier in Minneapolis, and the first time I heard about Summit was about 3 years ago when my cousin had just graduated high school and was looking for a quick educational program. At the time I was working full-time in education as a special education paraprofessional. I worked in education for about 3 years. But once the pandemic began, the school I was working at started to transition to full-time online classes, which gave me a chance to reassess my career path. I had previously attended MCTC after high school, but I was unable to attend school and work full-time, and I ended up with a small amount of student debt. I did remember that my cousin had finished school with no student debt, so I decided to try Summit. That's me following that ant trail. And I was able to get enrolled in the ninth cohort completely tuition-free. They helped me get a laptop so I could study from home or at work. The program was very broad in scope, and I built a great base of technological knowledge to continue to learn. And I mean, I don't really personally believe you're ever done learning. My next goal is passing the A-plus exam, which someone was able to provide a voucher for. Normally that would cost a few hundred dollars. And I graduated back in January and was immediately offered a job from Atomic Data, which is where I now work. I'm working in the service desk, which is one of two starting roles in the company, the other one being in their network operations center. And instead of like an uncertain future working in education, I have a very strong career, one of the most dynamic career markets growing in the country right now. And now that I'm finished with Summit, I have zero student debt. In fact, because of their internship program, I even left with some money in my pocket. So that's all I have to say.
I will say congratulations, because I think that accomplishment is highly noted. I just wanted to note that I used to live in Whittier. I went to MCTC. I'm now left with a student debt, which you don't have. I graduated computer science, so you can imagine the connections there. So anyway, no, I appreciate the work that is being done at Summit. We understand that, you know, the contributions that you have made, including even the bigger constructions. I've seen young people who never had the opportunity to be in the construction industry, and they received their, what do you call, training, and they were able to even do the stadium construction and many other places, even the apartment that I used to live. There were some who were trained from the Summit Academy. Members, any discussion? Any discussion? So I just wanted to say again, thank you. I look forward to working on some of the programming perspective. I know there are some few changes recommended, but I look forward to working with you, Mr. King, and to be able to figure out the best way forward as we deliberate on our budget. So thank you so much. Did you have any closing remarks, Representative Agbaj?
Thank you so much, Chairman Orr, and thank you to the committee for taking time to hear us.
I renew my motion, House File 1206, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you so much to the testifiers and to Representative Agbaje. So the next bill we have is House File 1105 with Representative Jay Zhong. Vice Chair Zhong, welcome again to your own committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the House File 1105 be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 1105 is a bill for an appropriation to the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs to help fund their statewide youth job skills and career development programs at club sites across the state. This is the second time I'm carrying this bill, and I'm proudly carrying it. Most of you know Minnesota Alliance Boys and Girls Clubs represents over 50 club sites, serving over 52,000 kids ages 16 to 18 every year. The Alliance includes club sites at the Red Lake and White Earth Reservations, Duluth, Little Falls, St. Cloud, Detroit, Bemidji, Rochester, and right here on the east side of St. Paul, West Side neighborhoods. And up the street from here to the Capitol at Mount Airy, and in North Minneapolis on the north side, and in South Minneapolis at the Southside Club, located just a block away where George Floyd was murdered. The Boys and Girls Club play a critical role in providing a safe and secure space place for our kids of all ages, between the time when they leave school to the time they go home to their families. And while clubs provide a variety of youth development services across all these ages, the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs Workforce Development Initiative has focused on providing comprehensive programming around job exploration, skill building, and career development that promotes a source of reliable workers, helps strengthen readiness for the workforce, and helps create a talent pipeline for local and national businesses. So today, we have the CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Twin Cities, Taro Broom, and then I'm butchering this, but Lama Ability, an alumni of the Boys and Girls Club, who will share their story about the impact this institution has had on them.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Jay Zhong, and Ms. Brown, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Terrell Brum, and I'm the president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Twin Cities. I am honored to speak before you today about our commitment to changing the lives and future opportunities for thousands of young people each year. We have invested in a transformational and all-inclusive program model that supports achievement of essential skill building from kindergarten all the way through post-secondary. Providing access and opportunities go hand in hand with setting goals and having high expectations of every young person. We have a responsibility to our youth and to our community to deliver holistic programming that makes an impact, one that extends beyond the walls of the club to shape exceptional adults ready to reach their full potential as healthy, productive, and compassionate citizens. We must create a system where every young person has the resources, the opportunities, the relationships, and experiences to become their best self, capable, and ready to achieve greatness. Our organization serves more than 6,000 youth, school-age youth, at 10 different locations in St. Paul, Minneapolis, and now in Ridgefield. Our current capacity, though, to serve many, many more youth each day has been greatly impacted by the pandemic. Like the rest of our community, state, and nation, we could not have foreseen the impact of COVID-19 and how it would affect our organization. Last March, our staff worked around the clock to activate a new operating model that would strengthen our relationship with kids, teens, and families to ensure that what we focused on mattered the most in terms of a crisis. We provided more than 14,000 wellness checks with families. We served over 2,220 meals and also provided virtual programming, ensuring digital connectivity and distribution of educational materials and supplies to youth and families. In the last year, we've evolved, innovated, and rebuilt our program model countless times to meet the new challenging circumstances our kids and families are facing. Sadly, the inequity between club families and those in more affluent situations is staggering. Technology barriers, lack of education resources, unemployment, food insecurity, inadequate childcare, and transportation issues continue to deepen the divide within our communities. On top of an already devastating pandemic, the murder of George Floyd caused a wave of distress, agitation, worry, sorrow, anxiety, and grief across the Twin Cities, deeply impacting our kids, our families, and our staff. We are committed to ongoing strategic initiatives to reduce systemic racism throughout the Twin Cities and have defined ways that the club serves as an activator in addressing the extreme disparities for young people in the communities that we serve. We are committed to implementing a program model that directly impacts the educational achievement gap. As we set forth our intentions for this school year, we looked beyond our club walls and saw that as an organization, we needed to go deeper to build a program model that focused on creating equitable solutions, supporting system change for our kids, for our families, for our entire community. Our program model integrates social emotional learning at every developmental level from elementary to middle school and throughout the high school years. This continuous learning opportunity reinforces attainment of important social emotional learning competencies that are linked to essential skills necessary to move successfully into the workforce. With a firm belief in personal strength and responsibility, we challenge and empower youth and their to engage in their future by setting goals and investing in themselves and their community. We fill the gap between school and home by providing youth with a safe, welcoming space where they can engage in programs and while having fun. They participate in life-changing programs and experiences, and they get to build those so important supportive relationships with professional staff. We focus on closing the achievement gap by ensuring equity in programming for each youth. We provide proven programs available in the area of education, environment, health, arts, careers, drug and alcohol prevention, leadership development, and athletics. The clubs offer customized programs through partnerships with community organizations and businesses. Children as young as kindergarten engage in problem-solving activities, team building, and many other essential transferable skills through play with purpose. Our teams explore multiple careers opportunities through field trips, speaking engagements, and hands-on activities. They are given the opportunity to lead community service projects and host town halls. Even in the midst of the pandemic, we supported over 300 high schoolers on a pathway to success as they engaged in our workforce program. Through private donors, we also offer club seniors the option to apply for post-secondary scholarships for college, tech, and trade school, as well as certification programs. In 2020, we awarded $137,000 in scholarships to 36 club alumni. Minnesota Boys and Girls Clubs are identifying the solutions to bridge the gap between a new generation of youth who feel poorly prepared for work and employers who say they can't find workers with essential skills. Through out-of-school time, in partnership with foundations, corporations, and the government, clubs can solve this challenge. We must apply a preventative approach by building essential skills at a young age, sparking career interest and excitement in youth. As you can see, after-school programs like ours not only provide safe spaces for youth, they provide the programming needed so youth can become successful adults. Our communities need youth-serving programs now more than ever as we work to combat the negative effects of the pandemic. Our future as a state is dependent upon our children growing up to be productive, contributing members of our society. State funding for youth workforce development is essential. On behalf of all of our youth and the future of our great state of Minnesota, I ask that you support House File 1105 to ensure youth serving career-focused programs across the state have the opportunity to receive funding for essential programs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I also have the distinct pleasure to introduce one of my favorite people, St. Paul native and club alumnus, Lamah Ability. Lamah is finishing up this spring a degree at the University of River Falls. As a high schooler, Lamah was actively engaged in our Teen Pathways program and often spent his out-of-school time in my office talking about his goals and talk and setting his plan for the future. Please welcome Lamah Ability.
Thank you so much, Ms. Worm, and Mr. Ability, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Right. Hello, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for having me. Thank you, Representative Jay Zhang, for also having me as well. Hello to the rest of the members. Thank you so much for having me here. My name is Lamah Ability, and yeah, as Tara mentioned, I'm in my senior year here at the University of Wisconsin River Falls, about to graduate. But it's been a journey, and that journey was really, really all due to the Boys and Girls Club. To bring us back a little bit. So I'm an immigrant from Liberia. When I came to the United States, assimilating with the American culture was extremely hard. I was constantly being bullied, getting into fights, trying to be a cool kid in school, being ridiculous in class, you know? So I needed a safe place that I can go and learn, interact with friends, and also build my career goals and aspirations, right? So that landed me at the Boys and Girls Club. When I was a freshman in high school, I was fortunate to join the Boys and Girls Club. At the time, still to this day, I lived in Mount Airy. I went to the Mount Airy Boys and Girls Club. When I was a freshman in high school, I realized I was in a very tough spot with my family, really trying to figure out ways to make ends meet. By my sophomore year of high school, the Boys and Girls Club, I started getting engaged in a lot of the programming, a leadership programming that helped me actually build my resume to go get a job as a sophomore in high school. I was able to get my first job and help my parents be able to make ends meet. But throughout that time, I had the privilege of really getting to know the club staff and how much they care about the youth. I was a high schooler that did not know he was going to graduate high school at all. Graduating high school was not in my plan. It was not something that I thought I was going to do, but the club inspired me and made me believe that I was able to do that, but much more. The club made me believe that I could be a productive citizen in this world. So my relationship with tarot really helped me shape to become who I am today. Once I graduated high school, I went on to college, and all of the leadership programs that I was a part of in the Boys and Girls Club, from Keystone, career launch, and different various programs that I was a part of, even the 18U basketball team, really prepared me for life beyond high school. I was fortunate to attend school where it was very tough to pay for school in the first place. I was fortunate to receive a scholarship through the Boys and Girls Club, which helped me continue my education. But that wasn't just the only thing the club had done for me. The club, even beyond high school, the club was able to stay with me throughout my journey with college, where I experienced a lot of tough times, and the club was there for me, although I was not even a club kid anymore. So one of the best things is that right there, just having a family to go back to be able to talk to. A lot of these youth that I grew up with have similar stories as I do, with the benefit that we have all been able to receive from the Boys and Girls Club. Fast forward, because of the resources and lessons I learned within the club, I was able to be more productive in my university. I served 3 years as president of Black Student Union, where I was able to enhance my leadership skills and more. And also, I was awarded the Chancellor's Award for my work that I did in the community here in River Falls, which was really good. But today, I'm more proud of the things that I'm looking forward to do beyond college. And these things are all because of the Boys and Girls Club. And to this day, I'm in constant talks with their CEO, Terrell, a bunch of the board members, and just kind of like nitpicking and learning from them. Because I want to pursue an entrepreneurship route with a club alumni, former club alumni, and I. We started a venture where we help supply clean water access to people in need. So what we did was we started a company called Didomi, which is actually right here. It's a reusable water bottle brand that helps provide up to 10 years of clean water access to people in need. So with everything that me and my other co-founder, an ex-club member, what we have been able to learn from the Boys and Girls Club, we are now taking that to bigger, not to just help the local community here, but we are helping the global community as a whole. But these are the constant tools that the club is continuously giving to the youth to learn, to engage, and to become more productive citizens in the world. And is the money goes to help these youth. Even this summer, with the protests happening, we realized that my family, even still living in Martin area, was struggling with food. But the Boys and Girls Club was there with food for these youth to take home. They were able to have a safe place to go, even when they're missing their friends at school. I will constantly talk to my little siblings, hey, where are you guys at right now? Oh, we're at the Boys and Girls Club, which is a very, very good spot for them to be in right now, especially being away from school. The club has been very beneficial to these kids and continues to. I've been fortunate enough to accomplish a lot of the good things that the club has been able to give me. And I'm very grateful for the opportunities. And I hope that you guys continue with the support of the Boys and Girls Club, because they are doing remarkable work in the community that are helping enable young people to achieve their full potential. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ability. Congratulations on your journey. Looking forward to see what you'll accomplish as soon as you're done with your graduation. So thank you so much. With that, members, any discussions? Lead Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Ability, do you see yourself, it's a remarkable story, thank you for sharing, do you see yourself becoming a mentor to other younger students, children that may have some challenges in their life? Since this was very successful for you and your accomplishments are, again, do you see yourself becoming a mentor to others?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my biggest goals is to be a mentor in the community. And I think the Boys and Girls Club have given me a great opportunity for that as well. I get the chance to go back to talk to the youth. Hey, I used to be just like you as a kid. I used to do this and this. I used to be this naughty. I used to be rude to my staff. Like, we are kids. We used to do this. But then I'm able to go back and be like, yo, But this is what life could look like if you choose to go on a different route. So being a mentor is something that I want to do, and the club is helping me provide the space for that. But one of the big things that I want to do, even despite all of that, is after college, I want to be able to get into the world you guys live in, the political realm, where I'm able to continue to influence in the community and be able to help these young people and give them a visual representation of somebody that have been through what they have been through and to be able to come out of it. And thank you so much, Rod, for the kind words. But yeah, being a mentor would be something that I would be greatly interested in.
Very good, Mr. Chairman.
Lynn Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Vice Chair Zhang. I believe I'm a co-author on this bill. If not, I'll make sure that I am, because it's a great program. Thank you. Thank you to the testifiers.
Thank you so much, Lynn Hamilton. And I think, Mr. Billity, you do have a good mentor who is sitting in front of us, Vice Chair Jay Zhang, who has been through this program. He's carrying the bill, so, and he also represents St. Paul. So you have somebody to look up to. So hopefully you can learn a lot from him. Any discussion members? If none, Representative Jay Zhang, Vice Chair Zhang, if you will give us your closing comment and renewing your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You have heard a powerful story from one of the testifiers today. And you all know well the work that this institution does to influence our children. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair Noor, Lead Hamilton, Representative Riz Olson, Representative Aaron Cagle, Representative Holden Hassan, Representative Fu Lee, Representative Esther Abaje, Representative John Thompson, Representative Gomez, Vang and Hollins for also being co-authors of this bill. It's my hope that we can continue to provide funding for this institution. With that, I renew my motion that House File 1105 be laid over for possible inclusion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Jay Zhang. Vice Chair Jay Zhang renews his motion, House File 1105 be laid over for possible inclusion. So thank you. With that, we are going to the last bill. Representative Becker, please move your bill and introduce us to your bill.
Mr. Chair, thanks. And members, House File 1324, I'd like to move this bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, I think, for this committee, Mr. Chair. And again, I'll just give a brief overview, and I'm going to turn it over to our testifier, Ben Wogslon. He's got a short video to show us. This is a program that's in place. It's been in a number of schools so far. It's a really great workforce bill to sort of introduce high school kids into our amazing culinary side of the world with our restaurant operations. And it has got a lot of folks around the state working on this kind of thing with local chefs and things. But we've got a lot of repairment and repairing to do, members, with our hospitality industry. This would be a small step to also kind of help feed our pipeline with future workers that, again, we're all kind of getting ourselves reestablished, just trying to get out of this hole that we're in this tough, obviously, several months. So with that, I think, Mr. Chair, and again, I want to thank Representative Olson, Representative Dabney, and Chair Noor to be co-authors on this bill as well with me. So with that, I'll flip it over to Mr. Wogslon, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Baker, for bringing this bill forward. Mr. Wogslon, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ben Wogslon. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Hospitality Minnesota. It's good to be before you, members, staff. Thank you all. You know, hospitality is obviously one of the biggest top drivers of jobs in our state, supporting 1 in 10 jobs in Minnesota. These two programs, the ProStart program and Hospitality Tourism and Management program, are successful national programs, workforce programs that are already in 100 Minnesota high schools and have trained over 5,000 students. You know, they're not just exciting culinary, cooking, and presentation and safety skills programs, but they also teach management skills, how to work as a team, how to triage multiple challenges under stressful conditions, how to price a menu, how to create a business plan, and many other translatable skills. Some of these programs even operate their own restaurants, like one of the high schools in Representative Olson's district, or maintain their own gardens, like one of the high schools in Representative Greenman's district. And others engage in food donation and other charity. You know, hospitality is clearly about service, and these culinary and hospitality programs are really growing in popularity, and demand is really strong as students learn about these opportunities for their future. And for many, helps them find their dream job. So I would love to take just a moment here and play a short video for the committee. It features a young man named Josh Walbold, who came up through the Elk River program. He's won a Charlie's Award, and you know, he's in his mid-20s, has already helped open 5 restaurants, which is, he's just a phenomenal individual, but kind of shows what can happen in a program like this. So with that, I'm gonna share my screen here momentarily and play a short video for you all.
Make sure to share the audio.
Yeah. All right, can you all see that?
Yes, we can.
I didn't know I could have a profession, cooking, until HMEF.
What is Hospitality Minnesota Education Foundation? The mission of Hospitality Minnesota Education Foundation, HMEF, is to educate and develop future employees and leaders for our industry, and to promote hospitality as an industry of great opportunity. ProStart and programs like this are the future of the restaurant industry, of the hotel industry, of the resort industry. This is where our people are going to come from.
The ProStart program, the reason why I started cooking, it was that competitive field and that learning I had in the classroom, and it was transferred outside the classroom and working with chef mentors while I'm in high school.
Food in general is fun. So you're making food, dealing with food, being able to eat it after you make it and see that what you made is like amazing is the best part.
Number one, they get to work with chef mentors in the field. So they have all of this experiential learning strategies and activities that are available to them with being able to go and tour the industry of hotels as well as restaurants and what is the behind the scenes look and the skills that are needed in the field. They come in and work with the students in the schools, the tremendous scholarships that are available for our students to help them transition more successfully to post-secondary.
HMEF exists to implement 2 career-building educational programs that promote the hospitality industry in Minnesota high schools.
Hospitality and tourism industry is a major economic driver in Minnesota, yet finding qualified candidates can often be a challenge. It's estimated over the next 8 years that this industry will add over 3 million new jobs. The Hospitality and Tourism Management Program provides students with the knowledge and the skills needed to compete for jobs in this really exciting career pathway.
Now there's room at the table for every single person to find their niche, and it's really exciting to be able to work with high school students and help them find something that, if you love this, there are a multitude of different areas that you can go in and just kind of give them that little nudge and let them go from there.
I feel like it prepares us for the outside world. It gets us out of our comfort zone, and it makes us use our minds to be creative. It also helps a lot with teamwork management and also manage our time.
HMEF helped me in high school. I got a scholarship through them, winning the state championship for restaurant management competition, and now it's what I do every day.
HMEF has been there for me the entire time throughout my entire high school career. If I really look at it, like how much impact they had was...
Hospitality Minnesota Education Foundation is the future of the entire tourism industry, and we need to continue to find ways to support it and grow it.
So thank you, for listening to that explanation. So in conclusion, you know, what the bill itself that's before the committee does is it provides a grant through through deed. It would be a $250,000 grant, and it would allow high schools in Minnesota to apply for grants of up to $5,000 to be able to help offset some of the teacher training costs as well as the materials costs. And as we talk to schools and we talk to teachers, these are some of the things that they and the districts tell us that they need a little incentive on and a little help on to both be able to expand the current and existing programs in our state and to also build new programs and expand new programs and new schools. So with that, I could go on with a lot of other things. These are truly are amazing programs. There's competitions and statewide programs that we could talk about more, but I think I'll pause there in the interest of time and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Wogsland. And I think some people are now hungry looking at the pictures of the great food presented. So I'll start with Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Baker, for bringing this bill forward. One question for you, Representative Baker, is why would you want to do this to anybody else?
Representative Baker, you're muted.
That's really funny. Thank you, Representative Frankie. As a former restaurant owner operator, and you're a current owner operator, I know, Representative Frankie, I thought I had those same thoughts. I will tell you though, the last 20 years when I was in it, it was an amazing career, and it's an amazing place to be because you can really get your hands into it, be fully in charge. This grant option could provide up to 50 more schools in Minnesota to get this thing up and running, and I am so excited about this program. So. Thank you for the question, and I hope you got another 20 years into your business out there, Mr. Frankie, as well. So good luck with that.
Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question for Mr. Wogsland, all kidding aside. I do see this program as being very beneficial. There's a lot of rewards and a definite need in this industry. And what we can do to give people a leg up and to give employers trained employees. And to put that passion out there. All stressors aside of the industry, I was just having a conversation the other day as I was on the grill cooking, like as much because of COVID and everything else is going on, I love cooking. I love it. I love putting out good food and I love people enjoying it. And it's very beneficial. And if you work hard, you know, you can succeed. So Mr. Wogsland, how do you promote this program throughout the schools? Is it only high schools? And what can we do beyond funding to grow this? And could you give me some information to provide to my schools? Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Frankie. We promote it through our foundation, Hospitality Minnesota Education Foundation. And we also, obviously, a lot of the people that are already engaged in it, teachers and folks at the Minnesota Department of Education also promote it. We're in 100 high schools now between the two programs. We're obviously looking to add more. I'm aware of about 20 others that are looking at adding it. There's time build out to get this up and running in the high schools. I believe it's about 18 months where they work with the education department here in Minnesota to get the program up and running. So for instance, in Minneapolis, Roosevelt added the program in the last, you know, couple of years and has it up and running now. But so there is some time in that. And then, you know, we're also involved, I think it was mentioned in the video, but the foundation has given scholarships, I think about $800,000 in scholarships to students over the last 10 years here. So these are folks who have gone through the ProStart and HTMP program and are choosing to go on to post-secondary programs, and we help out through that as well. So I think the other thing that we all can do is, you know, talk to your local high school and talk to your district and promote that. You know, some folks are really far ahead on this. St. Paul, for instance, I think almost every high school has the program up and running now other than one. Brainerd Lakes area, you know, Chef Tom that was featured in the video has done a ton of work up there to really get it expanded, and the Chamber's done a lot of work on that as well. There's other areas where we need to kind of get some more visibility for the district. So, you know, talk to the district, talk to your superintendents, and those are some of the other things that we can do to promote it.
Representative Frankie, we have three more hands raised, and we have 2 minutes. I just wanted, actually 1 minute, we'll go to Representative Cortez-Otun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be quick. Representative Baker, thanks for bringing this forward. A little known fact about me is that my first job was a prep cook at a restaurant in a golf resort in Kohler, Wisconsin. And this is a fabulous program. I think it is gonna, I think it does wonderful things now. And I think allowing high schoolers more access to potential career paths while they're still in school is a wonderful thing. So I'm gonna sign on, I'm a yes.
Thank you, thank you.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to speak briefly as well in support of this bill. One of my emphasis in the legislature is connecting education and industry, and this exactly does that at a time when this industry needs it the most. And our high school kids need opportunity for hands-on learning and need the exposure to what future careers look like. So we fund other programs in healthcare and nursing and manufacturing. I've been a co-author on a bill called Youth Skills Training that we funded the last two cycles that gives kids, you know, hands-on learning and credit while they're in high school. So I think this is a smart move for us, and it has my full support. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Honorable profession, to say the least. Mr. Chairman, I would like to just challenge all of us to work together to give these businesses some clear direction on reopening. I think we can do that, Mr. Chairman, and I don't want to get away from this bill or distract, but these businesses need some clear direction on reopening. I think collectively we can do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker, for bringing this bill forward. I'm a proud co-author, and I have eaten at the restaurant in Duluth that is served by the students, so it's great. And I fully support this. I'm so glad we're talking about it. And I just want to also make note, I want to make sure these future workers in the hospitality and industry have everything they need and also support. So I'm also carrying an earned sick and safe time, carrying other benefits. So I want to make sure that we think now, but we also think about what the workforce needs to look like and the support they need to have too. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think we'll have a cooking event from this committee coming months or before the end of the year. With that, Representative Baker, did you want to do a quick closing
remark? Just a quick closing comment, Mr. Chair. Again, to all the members, when we start putting all these bills together, I really do hope that we all look hard at the job bills, especially when it comes to the hospitality industry this year. I do hope that we get an extra double take on some of the bills that really need attention, because we need a lot of little things that help. This bill, the problem with this bill is it's not big enough. We should have maybe done more and more dollars, but again, we're very frugal with our money. We need to be careful. But with this, Mr. Chair and others, thank you for your support today. I hope that this one is one of our easier decisions of the year. So thank you again, Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker renews his motion. House File 1324 be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, members, we don't have any other business before us. The meeting is adjourned.